are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
He's got a notebook with my name and a bunch of X's all over it.
Does.
He's got to step boom. Up to a voodoo doll soon.
Ooh, I was going to say.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike Glennon, so pretty excited.
And we immediately lost all of our baseball fans because you are throwing out a bunch of football players, so awesome.
Hey, I heard the thunder. That was pretty sweet.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Are there any other 2013 first round draft picks that you like a lot? Because I mean, Appel and Moran were in the same draft, so I thought that was interesting.
Back coming in hot once again.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Prospect Show. That's right, it's Thursday. It's your favorite day. And I'm here with the usual suspects, Mr. Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing this evening?
A little bummed about my Bears, man. They don't have a direction. I mean, I guess I should have known this for the last couple of years, but today we lost Alshon Jeffrey and Jay Cutler and replaced them with Mike Glennon, so pretty excited.
And we immediately lost all of our baseball fans because you are throwing out a bunch of football players, so awesome.
Hey, it keeps me sane during the baseball offseason watching my Bears go 4-10 or 4-12. So
it's all good. Where can people find you on Twitter, Matt, nowadays?
Yeah, that's MD Tomp FWFB. And getting excited for the season to start dynasty questions. Today I got one from a guy with a 30 team league, so that was intriguing. It was fun to go over that with him.
Yeah, everybody should be messaging you like pretty much on the daily. Sorry, I'm having trouble speaking tonight, so if I end up stumbling over words, that's completely what's been going on all day with me, so I apologize in advance. But yeah, you should be messaging Matt all the time with questions because he's our prospect guy. You should be doing that. Also with us is Mr. Andres Andy AA Anderson. How you doing this evening, bud?
I'm doing great. I'll keep talking about football. It was really fun to watch Tim Tebow get hit by a pitch this past week.
Did you like how he just put his head down and ran? He didn't even nothing. Didn't even hurt him.
Well, I smirked a little bit. I enjoyed seeing him suffer. I'm not a mean guy, but I'll enjoy that. Yeah, he's got no business anywhere near baseball.
So. I don't have as strong as opinion of you on it. I'll just say it's not his fault that he's getting all the media attention he's getting. I think that's a complete failure on MLB's part. I shouldn't be getting MLB alerts when Tim Tebow is playing in a game when you don't get alerts for when Mankata's in the lineup anywhere. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I mean, as much as it is what it is, and I agree, you know, it's like CNN giving Trump all the media time. I still don't like it. I don't want to see Tebow in baseball season. But I'm excited about the prospects. This is going to be a weird list for all of us, I think. And you can find me at A. Anderson FWFB. As always, please hit me up with questions. I'm constantly bored throughout the day, so I need people to talk to.
Yeah, you can hit all three of us up with questions. I don't know if I already said where you can reach me at, but at Mike Werner FWFB, I'm very easily accessible as well. I want to say with Tebow, I've watched a lot of his at-bats, unfortunately, but the one that was like kind of the worst was he faced Brandon Workman, who's actually looking pretty good post Tommy John, throughout the spring. It seems like he's kind of rounding back into form, but Workman, like, if you watched what he was doing with all the other hitters, he was, trying to get some fastball command in and, throwing the changeup a little bit. But when Tebow was up, he didn't throw him one fastball. All he did was throw him a bunch of junk, essentially. And the last pitch that he threw to him on 0-2.
It was a hell of a curveball.
Oh, my gosh. It was a hell of a curveball.
Yeah, it was.
Just flat paint on the outside corner. And Tebow had no idea what to do. He just walked away. And he kind of looked at the umpire for a second. And then he just kind of went back over to the dugout. He just had no idea what to do. And just, I think that kind of just sums up what Tim Tebow is kind of getting himself into right now. When Brandon Workman is making you look like an absolute joke in spring training when he's trying to tune things up a bit, then I think that that's kind of a red flag that you might be biting off more than you can chew. But at the same time, I don't want to bash Tebow because he's honestly probably a top 10 human being in this world, like, to be honest. Hey,
and I don't want to bash a dude for following his dreams. And to be honest with you, and people aren't going to admit this, but he's been better than 99% of people thought he would be already. So they can eat that.
Yeah, I mean, to bring up a very bad, situation, I mean, he's very much like Jose Fernandez, at least that same mentality of I have a lot bigger dreams in this world. I have a lot bigger things that I've dealt with or that I'm trying to do. And baseball is just a game. I'm not going to stress out about it. You know, I mean, Jose Fernandez, his whole story, his whole life story kind of led him to a situation that is much harder than anybody could have imagined. So when he stepped on the baseball field and faced, you know, David Wright, he wasn't stressed out at all. He even said that in interviews, was like, well, I'm, you know, you guys can talk about all you want, how this might be a stressful situation for me or how I might get nervous at times like this. But at the end of the day, you know, when you look at my life experience compared to a game, this is just a game. So that's kind of the way Tebow looks at it too. You know, he has a lot of things that he kind of dives into in terms of helping out with the world. I mean, I know he does a lot of service work and stuff. So I think, mind you, I'm not as religious as he is. So he, you know, feels like he was put on this earth to do the greater good. And that's what his purpose is. And I'm all for that. But at the same time, it is kind of the same mentality that Fernandez had, which was, it's just a game. I'm not going to get bent out of shape about it.
Yeah. I mean, to have that sort of mental, I guess mental toughness is insane to me, but yeah, good on these guys to be able to do that.
Yeah. I guess I just come sounding off like the mean guy who doesn't want to see him near any of my baseball, but that's okay. I'll be the mean guy. I don't mind it.
No, let me be clear. I would be very content if I didn't see Tim Tebow swing a bat ever, which he's not really doing much of anyways, but if he was continuing to swing the bat and actually hit the ball, I still would be completely content not seeing that on a, you know, daily basis at this point. But anyways,
he's probably got a better contact rate than Yoan Moncada does this spring.
I didn't want to go on a diatribe about this, but I am now because you brought it up. Moncada has how many at bats, Matt? How many at bats does he have in this pre-training?
From what I've seen, he's 3 for 18.
3 for 18, and this is brought up.
I don't care about the batting average. The batting average isn't. I don't care about that at all. But it's the contact.
I know
I'm worried
about.
And
I'm not the type of guy that gets bent out of shape about stuff like this, anyways. But it's starting to frustrate me because I immediately after you sent that, Matt, I went on Twitter and I was kind of just scrolling through a little bit, which was probably the worst idea. And there was probably 70 to 80% of the people on there were saying the same thing that other people were, which was, I'm worried about Moncada because he has 8 strikeouts and, you know, such and such at bats. And my conclusion is, who cares? Like, it just doesn't matter. It's spring training. Nothing about his profile has changed. I just don't get it. And, you know, I started kind of spouting off in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits chat, you know, a little bit earlier. And it wasn't because I was, like, mad or anything, but I just, you know, when you're looking at prospects in general, especially for fantasy, I'm looking at guys that I want a high ceiling, that have a high ceiling and have the possibility of, you know, pretty much giving me the chance to strike gold somewhere. And I think with somebody like Moncada, that ability is still nothing. I feel like me talking about it is already way more than I should.
Yeah.
Way more attention than
yeah.
I should have given it.
We'll go in depth in this conversation when the season starts and the minor leagues are kind of nothing to talk about. This is a good subject for that. But I get the people that are concerned. I'm kind of concerned a little bit, but I'm also if he was 3 for 18 with 2 strikeouts, I wouldn't give a shit about it. But being 3 for 18 with 8 strikeouts after what we saw in the major leagues in September, I'm a little bit worried. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I honestly don't think it matters. I mean, people look at spring training stats. If they're bad, they don't mean anything, and if they're good, they mean everything. I mean, can you guys remember? I think it was, who was the third baseman on the Royals last year who had like the greatest spring training ever, and everyone was so high
Moustakas
on him.
Moustakas a few years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, it was Moustakas.
And Michael Franco last year, you know, had a pretty amazing spring. And he's also having an amazing spring now too, but.
But it meant absolutely nothing throughout the year. I mean, Franco did hit 20 odd home runs, but still, you know, spring training stats, they're hard to sort of quantify, especially because people are moving around. You know, the sample sizes are so low. But I'm not worried about Moncada. Let him go down. Let him refine his swing if it needs refining in the minors, and then he'll come up and be amazing.
I can't promise that if he had like 4 home runs right now and only struck out twice in those at bats, that I wouldn't be tweeting out like, oh, wow, look at Moncada. But to be fair, I wouldn't be placing him anywhere different in terms of the rankings or anything like that either. So,
well, you can't rate someone higher than number one, right?
You can't.
Not number one for me, but that's okay.
I know it's Andrew Benintendi, and you know,
we'll get into that.
Multiple, yeah. Well, so yeah, yeah. we talked about the list. You talked a little bit about the list that we're going to go through, Andy. We are actually going to go through starting pitchers this week, since I know we promised outfielders last week, but we're going to be doing starting pitchers. We're going to break it up into two series because it's too much to try and go through a top 30 of starting pitchers. Instead of going through a top 10, which I think is pretty simple, we're trying to do a top 30. We're going to do this episode. Well, we're going to do a top 20 with 10 honorable mentions, five for each episode. So we're going to go through 20 through 11 in all of our ranks this episode. Also, we're going to throw in five honorable mentions that we each came up with. And then next week, we're going to go through our 10 through 1 guys, as well as another five honorable mentions. And hopefully that gives the listeners at least a little bit of a wide spectrum in terms of what we consider the top 30-ish starters in the minor leagues. But I think that this is a good exercise because overall, I think that we'll probably be talking about 40-plus names amongst the three of us, and that at least gives everybody that's listening a good kind of grasp on the top tier of pitching talent in the minor leagues, at least right now. And then as the season goes on, we can kind of update things and go through what's going on and stuff. But this is a good little parameter to go with right now.
And if you feel like you're getting overwhelmed, listeners, just sort of as a rule of thumb, ignore and do the opposite of everything I say. Matt and Mike, they're the pros. Don't even listen to me.
That's not true. Opposite. Absolute opposite. But let's kick things off, since we do have quite a list here. And we also went on a diatribe about Yoan Moncada and Tim Tebow in spring training for probably way too long. So... before we do start, please again rate and review the show. iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of the podcast aggregators really helps us out. I want to just kind of continue to beat the drum on that because it really has made a difference. So please go ahead and do that. We do this for free. You can take 2 minutes out of your day and help us out. Anyways, let's start this off. So number 20 for you, Matt, who is your guy?
The best collegiate lefty last year, AJ Puck.
AJ Puck. How about you, Andy?
I don't know what the numbers are, the sort of the chance that might happen, but my number 20 is AJ Puck too.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty impressive, actually.
That was very impressive, yeah.
So we'll talk about Puck at length. I have AJ Puck as an honorable mention. So I'll kick it off to you, Matt, since you started off initially. What is it that you like about Puck, especially being a brand new drafted player that has you put him in the top 20 starters among fantasy?
It's easy to say what I like. I mean, the best college pitcher in baseball last year, and I don't think it was particularly close. Big 6'7", 220-pound lefty out of the University of Florida. Fastball up to 98-99 in short stints, touches 93-95 in multiple innings. Obviously, that's plus velocity from the left side. Big monster wipeout slider. Changeup, like most pitchers, it's going to be a common theme on this list. Third pitch isn't developed where it needs to be. The command is also a little bit inconsistent with Puck. He's got the stuff, if he gets it together, to be a number two starter long term. But there's also health concerns. He had a back injury in college. And I think if the command or third pitch doesn't come, I think he's a reliever. He's kind of one of the weird guys where there's no in between. He's either a number two starter or he's a reliever, because the fastball and slider are plus pitches on their own. So you're going to want to get the most out of those if he's not going to start. So I don't want to use this comp because I think Andrew Miller is crazy, but he could be that guy. He's very similar now to guys like Sean Newcomb and even Alec Hansen for the White Sox prospect. They kind of lump these guys together with the nasty stuff, but the command's not quite there. But it's pitching in a good ballpark. I'll bet on Puck, and it's weird because he was the best college pitcher, but I think it's still going to take him probably three years to get to the majors, and that's probably a long time for the best college pitcher in baseball. So,
wouldn't surprise me. Andy, what do you like about Mr. AJ Puck?
So I think that Matt sort of touched on this a little bit, especially when we're getting to these low end rankings. A lot of the things that we're going to be sort of highlighting are not necessarily stats, but maybe sort of
skill set.
Skill set, athleticism. Right, so we like tall lefties. That's a thing that we've seen be successful in the MLB for a long time. One of the reasons I think Puck is definitely going to transition to, I don't want to say definitely transition to a reliever, but he'd probably have more success, is last year, again, we have to do all the small sample size alarms, but he pitched five innings once last year. So he definitely needs to learn to to stretch out his starts a little bit more. But for every reason that we love Andrew Miller, and I'll do the comp if you won't, tall lefty, throws downhill. These are kind of the things that we're going to be looking up instead of how many strikeouts did he do in so-and-so years. So that's why I like AJ Puck.
I like his mechanics a lot. Yeah. I think that the fastball command will come because the Athletics are really good at doing that with their young starters, getting their fastball command kind of in check. Sean Manaea was not brought up with the Athletics, but he's the type of guy that I think has really improved his command in general because he's been with the Athletics for, you know, a substantial amount of time now. But, you know, in short, I agree with everything you guys have been saying. I will kind of add here that, you know, between the majors and the minor, or between his, you know, stint in Florida and the minor leagues last year, he threw over 100 innings. So he could theoretically throw for over 120, 30 innings this season, which is really nice. And it'll give us a really good gauge statistically in where he's at. I think that the main question, I don't think the fastball velocity is in question, which is really nice for a guy that's 6'7" and, you know, throws downhill. That's great. I think it really comes down to the changeup. If you can get that third pitch changeup in order, which, again, the Athletics are pretty well known for kind of harnessing with their young starters. One of them is on my list here. I think that the sky's kind of the limit for him. I don't think he's a reliever. I put him at 20, or I put him on an honorable mentions list specifically because I think he is a major league starter, and I think that he could be a fantasy two or three at some point as well. So I really like AJ Puck, and I agree with pretty much everything you guys have been kind of talking about there. My number 20 guy was Renato Lopez. I don't know. You guys probably have him on your list, maybe even higher.
I do. Yep.
Yeah, same here.
Number 12 on my list.
How about you, Andy?
12 as well. That's funny.
Well, let's quickly transition over to Lopez then. I'll just say the reason I have him lower on my list is because I think that the floor is him being a high-quality reliever in the major leagues, but I also think that the likelihood of him being a high-upside starter is kind of dwindling by the day. You know, for me, I think that the skill set is great, the size is great, but I don't like the move to the American League. I also just don't believe in his command quite yet. I think that it's going to take more time for him to be able to command three pitches. And for right now, at least, he's a two-pitch guy, still doesn't have the greatest fastball command. The stuff is great. The velocity is great. The body is great. But at the end of the day, I think that there is a stronger likelihood that he'll end up hitting his floor, which is a strong reliever, as opposed to the high upside starter that we were thinking he could be, you know, a year plus ago. So that's the only reason I have him at 20 here. But again, I still am very high on him, but I'm just getting a little bit more skeptical about the long-term projectability of him being a starter. Andy, why do you have him at 12?
So I have him at 12 because this is sort of going to be a calling point for me is I'm going to try to project guys that are going to be close to the major league. So that's why he earns sort of a semi-high spot for me, because he is ready. He had a cup of coffee last year, but this is another, we're going to see this a ton. Guys do well in the minor leagues. They completely kill minor league batting. They come up and major league batters are just ready for it, you know, especially with guys. And I don't want to say Lopez is a one-trick pony, but his fastball is clearly his dominant pitch, and batters know it, and especially experienced batters can round it out and put nice wood on the bat, on the ball. So I'd like to see him develop, like you said, the breaking ball pitch. I don't think he moves to the bullpen. I think he will stick it out as a complete starter, but I'd like to see him develop that third pitch, which is going to happen when he drops down to the minor leagues. And once that happens, he's going to come right up.
Matt, do you think he's a starter or a reliever long term?
Oh, I think he's a starter. That's why I have him ranked as aggressively as I do. I think coming over to the White Sox organization was one of the best things to happen to him. I think in Washington, he gets buried behind, well, at the time. Obviously, Giolito came with him over there, but Giolito, Eric Fetty's there, Austin Voth, who I'm not too high on, but he's there. AJ Cole, they still got a bunch of young starters. With the White Sox, he is a clear route to be one of the top five starters, and I think it's going to help him a lot. They were working with Don Cooper, is really good. Obviously, he needs to do work with the changeup. The changeup is the key to his success. 94-98 with the fastball, above average curveball. If he can get a changeup, he becomes a three-pitch monster. He could settle in as a number two fantasy arm for me. I'm that aggressive on him because the stuff is over a K per inning. The walks will probably be a little high. So I kind of comp him to like a right-handed Francisco Liriano kind of deal. But I think he's put on a – he's not a big dude by any means, but he has put on a lot of weight recently, looking just by looking at photo, like nothing crazy, just watching video and stuff, you can kind of tell in the last year and a half, he's gotten a little bit bigger, which that can, he has a trouble repeating his delivery, and that can kind of hinder that, you know, not being in the best physical shape. Makes it a little bit harder to repeat. And I know this is probably a minority opinion, but in a redraft format this year, I'm taking Lopez before I'm taking Giolito.
Wow, oh. That's a bold assertion.
Yeah, no way.
Absolutely. I think Lopez makes a better – obviously, I like Giolito better long-term, but in redraft, I think Lopez is the first guy up, and I think he has better staying power in the major leagues right now than Giolito does.
You would take Lopez over Glasnow?
Right now, no.
Okay.
Glasnow probably has a rotation spot, but just with Giolito, I think Lopez is the first guy up because he doesn't have as high of a ceiling, so the White Sox aren't going to be worried about that arbitration clock as much, all that stuff with where the White Sox intention window is. I think Lopez is the first guy up for them, and I believe in Lopez. I think working with Don Cooper is going to be really good for him in the White Sox. It's been proven in multiple studies. They do the best job in the major leagues at keeping their pitching staff healthy, which is also a really good plus, and I think Lopez going there is really, really good. So I'm high on Lopez. Like I said, I have him 12.
Yeah, I do, you know, daily matchups analysis, which is pretty much, you know, DFS analysis for Baseball HQ, and Lopez was the type of guy that I tracked pretty much every start last year, and I've watched the majority of his starts as well. And, you know, what I'll be looking for from him to improve is obviously the changeup, but he was just insanely aggressive. Like, he always, which I like in a sense, but he just always was trying to pump the fastball past people, and that's just not something he can do anymore. That was something he could do in A ball, something he could do in Double A. But, you know, obviously he's in the majors now. You alluded to that earlier, Andy. You just can't keep pumping fastballs by people in the majors. You're going to have to get those secondary offerings in check. And, again, I think that there's hope for him to be a starter. That's why I have him in the top 20. But at the end of the day, I just, you know, I'm leaning more that he's a reliever just based on his size and, you know, based on the fact that the White Sox do have other options. You know, it might take a year or two for them to come up and everything, but I think all in all, Lopez could be, but it's also good in the sense because the floor, at least, I think, is a quality reliever. I mean, most relievers have two pitches, and I think he has two quality offerings with the possibility or chance of there being a third. You know, if that works out, then he could be a starter. If not, then I think that he's still a solid reliever, so. Let's go to number 19. Andy, who do you have at number 19?
I have the son of one of my favorite pitchers of all time, Paul Quantrill. I have Cal Quantrill at number, but I think it's 18 for me. Yeah, 19 for me, I'm sorry.
I have him at number 18. Matt, do you have Cal Quantrill in your back 11 through 20?
He is number 17 for me, Cal Quantrill.
Oh, wow, perfectly ranked, all three of us.
How about that? Andy, start us off on Quantrill.
So, He has not pitched enough for us to make large metrics. He did have a full season last year at low A, but the thing I really like about him is, and now you can argue this till the cows come home, but I probably think that his cutter is his best pitch over his fastball. It moves ferociously. I mean, it's like a slider with fastball speed. It is a really good cutter, and he plays with it so well. He's got everything I liked about his dad. But the reason he's number 18 and not, or 19 and not higher, like I thought he was going to be for you guys, is because he's only had A and low A experience. I'd like to see him pitch in Double A or Triple A. I love the Padres system. I'm going to keep saying this for years. The Padres system was the best system, and I keep loving it. So anybody who has this sort of pedigree and is on the right system and has that sort of right body dynamic, I'm going to fall in love with. And Cal Quantrill is one of them.
Yeah, Matt, you want to add some stuff on him?
Yeah, I want to go even farther. I'm going to dive kind of into the Quantrill's background a little more. I mean, I think that's necessary to understand what kind of why he fell to the Padres, even where he did. I mean, he was
Tommy John.
He was an early contender to go number one overall in the 2016 draft, and then he hurt his elbow at Stanford. Tommy John. That's kind of why he only threw 37 innings, but he went eighth overall still. Struck out 46 and walked 8 in his first 37 innings back from Tommy John, which I think that's really impressive going against hitters that are more advanced than him, allegedly anyways. 92-95 with the heater, plus changeup already. Raw projectable slider/cutter hybrid that Andy kind of alluded to there. Also has a curveball, so he does have four pitches. Three of them are well above average, and the curveball should be an average, if not better than that pitch. So you're looking at a borderline number one, potentially, definitely probably number two with all that offering there. Obviously, he needs one of the breaking balls to take a little bit of step forward before he's up into the Anderson Espinosa stratosphere for me. But he's real damn close right now. And assuming he stays healthy, which is the only obstacle I worry about with him on out, the Padres have no reason to rush him. I think a late 2019 debut is probably likely. And I'm buying Quantrill aggressively wherever I can because I'm in love with this kid.
Absolutely agree. He is one kind of standout season this year from being a top five starter for me in the minor league. So, yep. I completely agree with everything you guys have said. I'm not going to beat around the bush. The thing that I love the most is that he already has four offerings, with all of them being essentially average to above average, with a couple of them flashing plus. So, at the end of the day, the guy's young. He's coming off of Tommy John already, which kind of means we have a decent amount of a grace period here with him. And I think that the sky is kind of the limit with him. I don't think he's like a number one necessarily, but I do think he's more a safe bet to hit number three or number two in terms of fantasy starter ranks at some point. And he I think will advance quickly through the minors. So
fantasy, yeah, probably number two or three. I agree with that.
He could be the ace of the Padres, though. I agree with that.
This is your buy window on Quantrill, because next year his price is going to be. Next year at this time, his price is going to be astronomically high. If you want him, you better get him now.
Yeah, I predict he's going to have a very fine season this year. I think he's going to go 100 innings of really quality ball. He might even make it up to Double A towards the end of the season. He could be a top five starter for me. I mean, you can go ahead. I think that he's going to have a really nice year, and he's probably going to pop up people's prospects list. So I agree. This is the time to buy.
A real minor thing. Does his dad being a major league pitcher help this at all? For me, it does. I mean, you kind of know what you're...
We talked about it a little bit, I think, in
with the shortstop.
Yeah. Is that, when guys have, fathers that have played the major leagues, they have experience. Not only is it in their bloodlines, but it's also they get the best coaching. They know who the dads know who to talk to in terms of getting them the best training. They're probably playing against the best competition growing up. There's a lot of things in their favor. So, yes, that it does play a role for me.
Sure.
It certainly doesn't hurt. I mean, it's sort of like this. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, I don't want to do the whole coach's dad thing because that sucks, but I'm just saying in general, yeah, it does help. Who do you have at number 19, Matt?
Luke Weaver.
Luke Weaver. I also have him on my list. I just want to make sure he's not in the top 10 for me. No, I have him at 17. Do you have Luke Weaver ranked, Andy?
I do not have Luke Weaver ranked. I think he was on my honorable mentions. Yes, he is.
All right, well, we'll still talk about Luke Weaver because I'm in love with the guy. So, Matt, since
go first, Mike. No, you go first. You love him more than me.
I love him more than you?
Yeah, you do.
Well, the main thing for me, I have him at 17, and it's not really the arsenal. We talked about him last year, Matt, and the thing that I love the most about him is his control. He has the ability to spot his pitches pretty much anywhere he wants. And his arsenal, while it's not insane, he does have a plus-plus changeup, and that's what I love about guys. His velocity won't overpower you, but the changeup is what I love the most about him. And the Cardinals are really good with their pitchers, a la pretty much every starter they brought up for the last 5 years. So I think the main thing with Weaver this year is that he is a redraft guy. I don't see the starting rotation as is. No rotations stay the same as the year goes on. And Luke Weaver is going to be the first guy that gets inserted whenever a guy goes down or a skip start or whatever. And he's prepared to pitch 150-plus innings if they need him to. I'm projecting him to pitch that, and I think that that's very valuable. So not only is he a dynasty/keeper asset for me, I think that there's actually an even bigger argument to make that he's a more important asset for redraft leagues this year than maybe long-term, because his upside isn't that of an ace, and it's not even that of a number two or number three for fantasy. I think his upside is more of like, a Jordan Zimmermann light-ish, somewhere in that region. Sure. And Zimmermann doesn't have the same arsenal, but Weaver I like because he's stable, he's mature, and I think he's ready. So I don't know if I like him more than you do, Matt. I just think that his role is probably going to be bigger this year than you might think.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I mean, he got off to a late start last year, Weaver did, because he broke his left hand shagging batting practice in spring, like, or the Arizona Fall League or something dumb like that. But he came up last year. If you look at the numbers as a whole, they don't look that impressive. He only had one AAA start. They called him straight up. He just made one five-inning appearance in AAA, went right to the major leagues. He's actually very solid if you take out his last three outings, which he was getting tired. It was pretty obvious. 11 earned runs and 5.25 2/3 innings. If you take those out, his ERA was 3.48 with a 39-8 K to walk ratio in 31 innings. That's impressive for a guy who supposedly only has, which he does, only has two pitches. Fastball was at 90, was average at 92. He, surprisingly for his small frame, he was able to get it up to 96. Plus command, like we've mentioned, with the fastball. The changeup itself is a plus pitch. Problem here, lacks a breaking ball. He's been working on a little cutter, also kind of which he uses primarily against lefties. And the curveball hopefully will take a step forward. I agree with you. I think he's a number three starter in real baseball terms, which probably makes him a four guy in fantasy realm. According to everything I read, any time the Cardinals tried to acquire an outfielder via trade this year, everyone was asking him about Luke Weaver, and it became an instant non-starter for trade deadline. That shows you how highly the Cardinals think of him because they wanted to hold on to him like that, despite not having a clear route to a role this season. So I agree with everything you said, Mike. He's probably going to start the year in AAA if everyone stays healthy, which with this cast of characters on that roster, this might be a tough feat, but I like Luke Weaver for this year too. So,
well, I didn't touch on his numbers, but you know, for his 9 or 8 games that he started, he had a 5.7 ERA and a 1.6 WHIP, and that's just flat out not the guy he is. When you look at Baseball HQ's numbers for him last year, he had a 3.76 expected ERA, which is kind of like their xFIP. It's a little bit different, but he had a 3.76 expected ERA, 40%. Hit rate, which is, you know, 400 BABIP. Usually that regresses for pitchers back down to the 300 range, you know. But what I love, I mean, he's not this type of pitcher, but he had 45 strikeouts in those 36 innings. Again, he's not that type of guy. He's more of a 7.5, you know, strikeout per nine asset. But the walks are certainly going to be great for him, and hopefully he gets a little bit luckier in the home run department, because he did give up a ton of line drives and fly balls last year.
He got tired toward the end of the year. And like I said, he had 11 earned runs in his last 5 innings. You take those out, 3.48 ERA, which is real nice.
Yeah, so. And he also had a strong, you know, base performance value, which is another metric they use to kind of sum up all the, you know, underlying metrics for the guy. But either way, yes, I'm very high on Weaver. Andy, do you have any thoughts on Weaver as your honorable mention guy?
Well, I sort of going to harp on what you guys said, but I actually like to see him transition to the bullpen. And I especially think that if the Cardinals make a play, which, I mean, I know you're talking about their team being sort of dinged up and hurt, but it seems to be that every year we say, oh, the Cardinals are not as good as they were last year, and somehow they are always in the playoff run. But their bullpen is definitely an area of sort of question mark. So I think that especially if Waka does strong, which I think he will, I think Waka is going to come into his own a little bit more. So he's going to have that fifth rotation spot. Weaver comes into the bullpen. He could do really well, especially because he is a two pitch pitcher.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, with the Cardinals' lack of starting pitching depth in the upper minors, they can't afford to put Weaver in the bullpen at the beginning of the season because he is their guy.
Oh, yeah, not in the beginning of the season.
Someone gets hurt.
I said if the Cardinals make a playoff push, I would like to see Weaver come up and pitch in the bullpen instead.
He'll be up for sure this year. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, agreed.
Matt, who do you have at 19?
19 was the aforementioned Luke Weaver. 18 is Jarrell Cotton, our boy.
Okay, let me talk about – well, my number 19 guy is Tristan McKenzie. I don't know where you guys have him ranked, but I would prefer to talk about him before Cotton.
Let's do it. Go ahead.
Where do you have where do you guys have him?
McKenzie's 16 for me.
How about
McKenzie
you,
is not on my list.
Wow. Okay. So we'll talk about McKenzie really fast. So what I like about him is his control. Mind you, if you look at his minor league numbers, they're pretty outrageous, especially last year. I mean, he had one
video game.
Yeah, it was, you know, in 49 innings in, you know, low A, he ended up having a 0.5 ERA and a 0.96 WHIP. Then he went up to, you know, Lake County, you know, A ball, and threw a 3.18 ERA and 0.97 WHIP, 13 strikeouts per nine and 1.6 walks per nine. That's not the type of guy he is. He doesn't have plus velocity. He usually sits in the 90, 92 range. Really long, slender guy. He's only 19. He's out of high school. But what I like about him is that he's already throwing a ton of strikes. He's doing pretty well in terms of command. But what I love about him is that I think he's going to progress fairly quickly. Cleveland knows what they're doing with pitchers, so that's why he kind of makes the back end of my top 20, because I do think the projectability is that of a guy that can be a mid-rotation fantasy guy won't have the strikeout numbers to be a top type tier guy, but I think that he's more of a, you know, number three, number four fantasy person that can has a little bit of the same upside as Luke Weaver, maybe a little bit more, but should get some of those secondary offerings to be a little bit better than they have been. I think that there's a little bit more projectability in terms of those secondary offerings. So
I love McKenzie.
So do I.
He has one of the best nicknames ever. Have you ever seen him? He's 6'5", 165.
Yeah, he's like a twig.
And it's funny you say that because his teammates call him Sticks. So
I didn't know perfect. That was his nickname, but that's pretty apt.
It's perfect. And like I said, 6'5", 165, that's incredible. And despite the 165-pound frame, he's throwing in the low 90s. He's going to add weight. It's hopefully going to be good weight because it looks like his frame can sustain that. There's a chance his low 90s velocity turns into mid 90s. And with his, as long as it doesn't affect his command and he does repeat his delivery well enough for being 6'5", one of the taller pitcher, he's going to be really nice pitcher to invest in. He's the definition of projection. 1.51 ERA is his career. I know that's not the best way to judge pitchers, but that's his career ERA as a starter. 121 Ks, 25 walks, and 95 innings. That's outstanding numbers. Strike throwing machine, like we said, low 90s. Hopefully he has more big 12-6 curveball and a changeup that's usable already. Commands everything pretty well. Screams projection. The sky's the limit for this potential fantasy monster. So I've always been high on him. There's no reason why you guys all shouldn't be either. And he's another pitcher, kind of like Quantrill. This is your last chance to get him.
I agree. That's exactly what I was just about to say. McKenzie and Quantrill, I think, are two guys that you can still get at a pretty affordable cost that are going to exceed whatever you pay for them right now.
He didn't even get kept in our 20-team Friends of Fantasy Benefits dynasty.
No, he didn't. And I'm pretty that's crazy. Sad that I didn't get him. So
I overlooked him because I figured it was a slam dunk and that he was already rostered. And
he got before I was planning on taking him. So
I thought he got kept, so I didn't even look for him.
No, he did not get kept. Yeah. Or get kept or whatever. But Andy, do you have any thoughts on McKenzie?
I mean, I sort of going to keep repeating myself with the point where it's going to bore the listeners, but I understand and I like him a lot. I just don't like that he's 19. I'd like to see a little bit more. The ERA, I know it's a really cool number, but it almost means nothing because it's not even 100 innings. Or maybe just over 100 innings. But I'm being an idiot too because my guy at number 18 is Colby Allard. So it's all, I don't know. Maybe I'm just an idiot.
No, you're not an idiot. Matt, do you have Allard in your top 10? Because I'm pretty sure you do.
I do. I'm not going to say where he's at. Spoiler alert, but he is in my top 10.
Okay, so where do you have Jarrell Cotton, Andy?
17, right before Allard.
All right, so we all have them. We all have Cotton in our back end of our top 20. So we'll talk about Jarrell Cotton. I will let you lead off, Andy.
So it's sort of, again, proximity, proximity, proximity. He is probably going to pitch this year. I am really sure of that. In four innings this spring, he's got 5 Ks. It means nothing, but he had a pretty good year. He had a pretty good year last year. He has great frame. You know, we're talking about that frame again. That's gonna play into it. He's a little bit shorter than most guys, but he does have the good ultra athletic starting pitcher that I like. Had good numbers. So the strikeouts are there. The strikeouts are real. They are something to buy. So it's another reason why he's high up on my list. He is a two-pitch pitcher again. He's got a good fastball and a good cutter. I'd like to see him develop a third pitch. Probably the curveball is next. But again, for me, he's pitching this year. He's gonna have major league innings this year.
Yeah, I like Cotton a lot. I just want to say, Matt and I talked about Cotton last year.
We don't normally do this. We're not these type of people, but I would like to toot our horn for a second here because I think we were on Cotton before other people were, which
right
is great.
Right when the trade was made, as soon as we figured out how he went to Oakland, we were on the bandwagon, and it was it wasn't. I didn't think it would get like this good this fast.
No.
So I will cop to that. I didn't think that it was going to be this fast of a progression for him, but. I will say that we were on Cotton last year, so, we are kind of the best-kept secret ever. You know, I pretty much will mimic what you said, Andy. I think that he has two very plus offerings. Obviously, the changeup everybody knows about. It's a very popular offering, especially since some of the bigger names in the industry are kind of touting or, you know.
Double plus pitch. Yeah. Double plus pitch.
Absolutely. Crazy. So, and his fastball isn't straight either. It's not, you know, it's kind of got some of that Roy Oswalt to it, just a little bit of sink. He can kind of manipulate it a bit, which I really love. And, you know, along with that fastball command that Oakland really likes to push on their pitchers, I think that that already, just the fastball changeup combo in itself, is a really good blend to have for somebody like Cotton. He's not the tallest guy. He's about 6 foot, maybe 5'11", you know, but his weight is fine. And I think that he has the command and the arsenal to be a solid major league regular pitcher. The reason that he's in the back half of my top 20 is because I don't think he's a top tier starter. I don't think that he will be an ace for your fantasy team at any point, but I do think he's going to be a guy that gives you quality innings this season and beyond. I don't know if you can buy him right at this point, though, because I think that everybody is pretty much on the bandwagon for Jarrell Cotton.
The price has jumped the shark here, man. It's way too much money. We have to pay way too much to get Cotton now, which is unfortunate.
It is. But this is a guy that has struck out a good amount of players in the minor leagues. I believe he led the PCL in strikeouts last year, if I'm not mistaken.
He did. Yes, he did.
So there you go. I mean, I think that this is the type of guy that, you know, can have a long, sustained career with success involved. And I have him at number 12 on my list due to that. I think that, you know, since his proximity is so close, it's not even that it's so close. He's going to be in their major league rotation this year. You should expect 150 innings, pretty quality as well. Yes, he's going to go through bumps and bruises because that's what all young starters go through. But I think overall, especially once he gets, you know, he has a curve and a slider that he kind of messes with. Once he gets one of those kind of consistent, not even above average, just average, to where it can kind of supplement the fastball command and the lethal changeup, you'll be looking at a guy that can really, really disturb some batters in their timing. So I really like Cotton. Matt?
Yeah, man, I love Cotton. Like I said, the double plus changeup with the fastball with movement. I guess since we talked about everything that's so great, he's guaranteed to have a rotation spot for this year out of the gate for the A's. The only thing is, I do say, be prepared for an innings limit he might hit at the end of the year, so just be ready for that. The thing I do like, though, double plus changeup, like I said, the thing I don't like about Cotton, which is nothing he can change, is I think the fastball, he's going to be very similar to another former Dodger that they traded away that we're going to touch on probably here today as well. The lack of plane on the fastball. His moves a little bit more than De Leon's does, but Cotton doesn't have that downward plane. So, I mean, he is going to be prone to the home run ball. It's going to be suppressed a little bit because he's in Oakland, but the home runs are going to be an issue here. But he's developing he's got that changeup in the fastball. Like we said, he's developing a cutter to use against lefties. He doesn't really have a consistent breaking ball to go to right now. And I'm not sure the ceiling is ultimately that high, but I think the floor is what you're going to get this year, if that makes sense. Like, I don't see him improving terribly too much, but he's a safe option, and he's going to be a number mid-rotation guy for the A's for the next 5 years if they don't trade him. So, I mean, he's another good late-round find by the Dodgers, and he's going to have a major league job this year. So, Jarrell Cotton, everybody.
Yeah, I also, just to touch on your innings point, he threw over 160 innings between the majors and the minors last year, so he might be able to bump that up to like
180, 180,
185. 190 spot. Yeah. And that might not even be like unorganic either, because he might have starts that he only goes 4 or 5 innings, then he might have other starts where he goes 7. You know, I mean, so I think that if he makes, you know, 30 plus starts, that still might only equate to 180, 190 innings, just based on the fact that he doesn't have enough experience to go 7 each outing. So
I guess so then be aware of that in quality start leagues. But then we're nitpicking at that point. But yeah, just so you know.
But it's also worth mentioning that most of these guys, especially where the state of the game is, most of these guys that we named today are going to have inning limits, just because everybody is so scared of TJS these days, and nobody wants their fancy new number one prospect pitcher to go under the knife.
I'm not even going to go on a rant about that. I completely agree with you. I'm glad you said that, but I cannot stand how teams treat their pitchers nowadays. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. All right, but let's move on. You're right.
I mean, back in the day, these guys were throwing 150 pitches an outing. I just don't, you know, I don't get it. But all right, so we went through what, number 18 or 19 or 17? Sorry, I have no idea where we're even at right now, because we've been going through so many different guys. So
I'm on 16 on my list, if that helps.
Yep, that sounds good to me. I have my numbers 20 through 16 have been covered, so.
All right, so number 16 for me is Jason Groom. How about you, Andy?
Mine is Newcomb, but I like Groom. We can talk about Groom if you want to talk about Groom.
How about you, Matt? Is he in your back half?
Groom is in my top 10.
Oh, okay. Well.
So what you want to do? We can talk about him now. He's 10th, so.
Yeah, we can talk about Groom now. I'll have you lead it off, Matt.
There's not a lot not to like here. The only thing that's the big downside for
Boston, that's obvious.
That is obvious not to like, but the big downside to Groom is the proximity to the major leagues. Just being a high school draft pick this year, he was the number one player on my board. Didn't work out that way. He fell considerably due to the signing concerns, which proved to be valid because I believe the Red Sox paid. I want to get the number right here. $3.6 million to sign him, which was a little bit less than was originally thought. Top prep pitcher off the board. Signability concerns and makeup concerns kind of pegged him a little bit. I don't worry about that as an 18-year-old. 6'6", 220, that's what I love for being left-handed. He does repeat, has the mound presence, and I saw John Lester comps thrown on him due to his mound presence. So that's a really good thing. 91-94, huge hammer curveball, which is the best in the draft class. Future frontline starter, going to fly through the minors, I think. He's going to go as fast as the Red Sox are going to let him go. And like I said, I'm not worried about those little makeup blips. So Jason Groom.
Yeah, I mean, high schooler definitely fell in the draft due to the money concerns. Some reports have him touching as high as 97 in some tryouts or whatever. I mean, it's just going to take time. So the fact that I have him in the back half of my top 20, I think just shows that I do think his upside is that of a guy that can be a number one starter for fantasy teams and for the Red Sox at some point as well. It might take time. He could be a fast riser based on the fact that he does have decent command for his age and plus velocity from the left side. He also has a pretty lethal curveball as well. So you're pretty much looking for him to develop some type of third pitch, more than likely a changeup that can, you know, prove to be a legitimate offering in the major leagues. But at least for right now, he's a very high upside arm that once again the Red Sox just, you know, being able to grab a guy at that spot in the draft just really kind of lucked out. Even though, yes, there is some maturity concerns, which I am with you, Matt. I just really don't care about, you know, any type of off the field issues right now, at least in a player's career. And the fact that he's, you know, got this type of upside and the Red Sox were able to nab him, I think is just really good on them and, you know, good for them to get somebody like that late in the draft. Andy, how about Jason Groom?
So again, he's actually one of the youngest guys that is up on my list. And the reason that he's up on my list is because he's got a developed, safe, amazing curveball. You know, he doesn't need to put on any more mass, but I have 97 here for speed too, but if he got that curve, that fastball is where it was consistently 94, 95, 96, where that was sort of it's kind of weird to say a secondary pitch to his curveball. I really like that. I really like his age. I too don't care about anything off field. Like, pitchers be pitching, so let them pitch. So I'd like to see him have a full year, but he's not going to crack the top 10 unless he has a really, really good year for me this year. And that's why he's in. Yeah.
I agree. I wouldn't put him in the top 10 unless he really shows that he's going to make a big step forward. And not even numbers-wise. I'm just more or less talking Arsenal-wise. I did just get Minor League TV for the first time this season. Usually I'm just always a horde of the, you know, YouTube clips and this side or the other. But I, you know, will be very happy to be able to watch some of these guys live and just be able to kind of take and consume all of that. And Jason Groom's going to be one of the players that I've certainly had my eye on for a lot of the year. So let's move on to our number – well – who else did you guys have at 16? I apologize again. This is just going to be a...
No, it's fine. I have Tristan McKenzie at 16. We already discussed.
And I have Newcomb at 16.
Matt, you have him outside the top 20, right?
I do.
All right, let's talk Newcomb then. Let's talk Newcomb because I also have him as an honorable mention. So...
He's not even an honorable mention for me.
Well, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
Anyways, Andy, why don't you lead off with Newcomb since you have him high?
Well, you can't talk about one CC Sabathia-esque player and not talk about the other. This is another enormous man. Left-handed, huge guy, 6'5", 255, as my numbers say. The reason I like him more than I like or just as much as I like, who were we talking about? Groom is the fastball is plus as is Groom's. The curveball is plus as is Groom's, but he has the changeup. He's got that third pitch. I think the problem with him is going to be moving that enormous body every day, and keeping that stuff consistent. He has pedigree. He does have the sort of CC Sabathia-esque figure and movement. But we're going to need to see him be more, build some stamina and be able to carry that. And again, proximity. He's 23. He pitched in Double A last year. He'll probably pitch in Triple A this year. And then he's just one phone call away.
Yeah, I do think he makes the majors this year at some point.
Yeah.
I think he will probably see a few starts towards the end of the season. I don't know why you have him outside of the complete honorable mentions, Matt. I mean,
I'll tell you, I got one number for you. I got one number for you when you're ready for it, and I'll tell you why, but continue.
It's probably something that has to do with his walks, which is why I don't have him in my 11 through 20 because of the walk issues. I look through his numbers because, honestly, I rarely look at numbers. Like, I usually just look at scouting reports and I watch video. And, you know, Newcomb, what I see dominantly when I watch Newcomb is he's just inconsistent. He's inconsistent with his delivery. Yeah. He's inconsistent with his command. While he's so big and just such a, you know, massive force on the mound, he can't use that tool because he just doesn't command his pitches enough. So, yes, he does have a really good fastball. His curveball is legit plus, and his changeup is solid too, but he just can't command any of it. And I just feel like especially once he gets into AAA this year, he's going to be in for a rude awakening, and he's going to need to adjust. I mean, when I look at his numbers right now, like, these walk rates need to get better flat out. And I feel like this is the same
thing. They're terrible.
I've been talking about Newcomb for over a year now. And, you know, we said it last year. I'm going to say it again this year. The walks haven't gotten better, and if the walks don't get better, then he's not going to be a fantasy asset for anybody. He's going to be a guy that, you know, we're going to have to use in relief, which is, you know, great when you're looking at a guy that can strike out a ton of hitters, because that is something he does consistently well. And he also limits the home runs, but also you're looking at a guy that limits home runs because he's kind of effectively wild. I mean, he's wild, but it's not really effective because he's letting those base runners on. In a nutshell, Newcomb can be a number one or even number two starter in the majors if he was to command his pitches better. I think everybody knows that. This isn't new. I mean, this is the calling card on somebody like Sean Newcomb. But I would say the biggest likelihood or the most reasonable projection for Newcomb is that of a guy that's going to be somebody that's very inconsistent, probably stays in the starting role for Atlanta for a while, but if things don't ever change, he will be a bullpen arm. So I think he's going to have a chance until he fails at the major league level, which is why he's still going to be an interesting arm for fantasy. But for now, I'm willing to let go of shares of Newcomb because I just don't see it getting any better based on what I've seen video-wise. Matt.
A couple of things work against Newcomb here, and some of them aren't his fault. A lot of things we've read with tall lefties, they don't repeat their mechanics well, tall pitchers in general, and that's the case here. And a lot of people are like, okay, well, maybe he can work at that. The thing with Newcomb is if you watch him pitch, his mechanics are so simple. It's all basic mechanics, and he still doesn't repeat them. He loses the release point on his fastball, which obviously causes issues. Gets to the side of the curveball with the release. Sometimes if you watch his curveball slow it down, you get the freeze frame just right. It's a couple inches higher than the last time he threw it. You can't have that. Changeup is okay, but, I mean, it should be an average pitch, but he's not going to need it because he's going to be in the bullpen with his two-plus pitches with his fastball curveball. And another reason why I say he's going to be in the bullpen because Atlanta's loaded. Colby Allard, which we'll talk about later, Max Fried, Ian Anderson, Teron is young, Mike Fultonevich, Matt Whistler. I know a lot of these guys aren't sexiest names, but they're there.
Those names are not really that great.
And, but they throw more strikes than Newcomb does.
This is true.
And they're already established pitchers, and which Newcomb is not. And yes, he's going to be in AAA this year. I would be shocked if he is ever a starter for a full season without making these significant changes. Last year, we were high on Newcomb on the podcast here because we're like, oh, only if he can put it together. It's time. It's time, my man. He's going to play this season at 23, which is still young. He'll be 24 at the end of the season. Still young. He does a very nice job suppressing hits. does a very nice job with over a strikeout per inning. All that says is reliever to me, man. It's the walks are out of control. 4.5 per 9, and this was and they're trending in the wrong direction. So I'm out on Newcomb, as the kids say. Out.
If someone offered you Michael Wacha right now for him, would you take Wacha?
In a fantasy realm?
Yeah.
I would take Wacha. Yep.
How about you, Andy?
I'd probably take Newcomb just because of the upside is better than Wacha.
Is it though? If Wacha's healthy, which he seems to be, I think the upside's much higher than what he showed last year.
Yeah, but his best time was what, in that playoff stretch a couple years ago?
He'll never be that good again.
Don't get me wrong. I was all over Wacha. When he was the best name arm in the minors, I was all over him. But just because Newcomb hasn't touched the major leagues, his ceiling's obviously higher, but that's purely because he hasn't touched the major leagues, so we don't know what he could do. He could come up and do well. But I'd rather have essentially what I'm trying to say is I'd rather have Newcomb's ceiling than Waka's floor.
Sure, and I guess to kind of pivot off that, the reason why I had AJ Puck rated 20 is because I think Puck is likely to become Newcomb. I see the similarities there a lot with the strikes and the mechanics, even the fastball slider combination, developing changeup. It's all similar to me. That's my worry with Puck, why he's lower. It's because of Sean Newcomb, and I just don't like Newcomb. Sorry.
Alrighty, so let's move on to number 15. At 15 for me, I have Colby Allard, or is it Allard? How do people pronounce that? Because
I think it's Allard. Colby Allard.
Yeah, just reading it, I want to say Allard, but, you know.
Allard. I think it is Allard. I think it's Allard.
No problem. How about you, Andy?
I think it's Allard, too. No, I actually have Bill Hader's cousin, Josh Hader. I don't know if they're cousins. I like that idea.
How about you? That would be a great idea, actually. I hope they are, even though I know they're not, but, you know. How about you, Matt?
I have Hader and Allard in my top 10. And my number 15 guy is Mitch Keller for the Pirates.
Where's Mitch Keller for you, Andy?
I actually had Keller at 20, and I decided to go for Puck over Keller. So that's...
We'll talk about Keller because I have him at 13. So I think that's a good name that's in our back halves here that we can kind of touch on. Because I don't want to go too much into our top 10s. I think that'll be a couple guys that we'll overlap on that we'll have to talk about. But I want to save really a lot of the top 10 guys for next week. That way we can really kind of dig in on the real quality guys. I mean, not saying that these guys aren't quality, but let's talk about Keller. So I'll start with you, Matt. What do you like about Keller?
He kind of was a pop-up guy last year. People kind of under the radar. Had 138 strikeouts and only walked 19, which I'll circle that number and repeat it. Only walked 19 over 130 innings. Loaded mid-90s fastball that can scrape 97. Three-pitch mix to get ground balls and pile up the strikeouts. Keller's curveball is the borderline plus. I'm a curveball whore, my favorite pitch. It's his primary off-speed offering. He also has an above-average changeup, which he uses to attack left-handed hitters. He had a little bit of forearm scare in 2015 that kind of abbreviated it and cut it short of his innings. The results...
were not great.
No, and from a fantasy... From a fantasy realm, Keller might not carry as much value as he would in for the Pirates, only because I think he gets too many. His preferred method to get outs is ground balls, and that's obviously not a fantasy stat. I wish it was, because it'd make a lot of guys a little different. But the whip and ERA will be strong due to the high ground ball percentage. But I think he's a number three upside for fantasy just because of the lack of strikeouts. He's another guy. He was right. I had Keller, Quantrill, and McKenzie all 62, 63, 64 on my list. And I think he's another guy. Buy now because the window's closing. He's ahead of where Glasnow and Taillon were at this stage. I'm not saying he's going to be that good, but he's ahead of where they are. So just keep that in mind. Pittsburgh does a great job developing pitchers. So.
I think I'm higher than you are on Keller. I have him at 13. I don't know if that is higher technically or not, but
15.
Yeah, so I love what I saw at Keller last year. And, you know, I went back and watched some things, and I was impressed even more. He's really solid mechanically. The ground ball rate, I actually love. It's a great component in looking
for
fantasy starters.
So do I. Just for fantasy, it kind of hurts you a little bit.
It doesn't. It doesn't, though, because if you have a 50% plus ground ball rate, that means that, I mean, yeah, you might give up a higher BABIP, but it usually regresses back to 30 or 300 anyways, and that is a higher likelihood for, you know, outs, even though fly balls are the easiest out to get. But I think Keller, the fact that he has such great fastball command, and that is his best offering. I mean, the dude can, you know, hit up in the, you know, 95 plus range. He's still pretty young at 21. I do, you know, I am a little bit tentative about that arm injury he had in 2015, but the biggest stat, the 19 walks and 130 innings pitched, that is legit. I mean, it doesn't, you know, that is one stat that looking at it on a webpage really does jump out to you. So regardless of, you know, what you see in video, that's a really good, you know, indicator that he's going to be somewhat solid in terms of his command. I think the curveball is great as well, like you already said, Matt, and, you know, hopefully he gets another, you know, pitch. Usually it's a changeup. He has a pretty below average changeup right now, but he gets that under wraps. I think that we could be seeing an even higher upside, maybe even number two. I love the fact that he's going to be pitching in Pittsburgh unless he gets traded, but I'm really, really high on Keller. He's another one of those guys, Quantrill, McKenzie, you know, I think we were talking about Groom.
You got it right.
Yeah.
You got it right. Yeah.
Anyways, all those type of guys, including Keller, I think are really nice buy lows. They're probably better buy lows now than somebody like Jarrell Cotton, who we were talking about, because Cotton is already well known and established at this point, even though he's only thrown, you know, 20 something major league innings. But I think Keller's a really nice name. How about you, Andy? What are your thoughts on Keller? I know that the proximity isn't really there, which is why I'm assuming he's not in your top 20, you know, when you threw Puck in there. But, you know, what are your thoughts on him?
So exactly, it's that he's probably a year or a year and a half away. But I'll go into some things that you guys didn't mention that I like about Keller. You did mention keeping the ball down, which is good. But a lot of times that doesn't mean a good pitcher. You know, we remember what was the guy's name? Ching-Ming Wan. Everybody loved him. Greatest ground ball pitcher ever. And through half the year, he had a 45 ERA when he was playing. So ground ball pitcher is not necessarily great, but fastball 97, 98. Down in the zone, consistency, that's what makes you a good pitcher. But it doesn't make you a good fantasy pitcher. That's thing number one that I like. Thing number two is I like the fact that he got injured. It was a lot of people said it was a mechanical problem, the funky delivery or the way he was moving about, and he fixed it. So that shows sort of mental growth, the ability to say there's a problem here, let me fix that. And again, the walks are cool. You know, I'm going to come to you, Matt, with the walks. Does it remind you a little bit of Adam Wainwright that one year that he had like six walks or something?
I could see that. I mean, yeah, Wainwright's a ground ball guy too. I mean, he's not going to. I think obviously Keller's got the better fastball, but Wainwright at one time did get it up to that high side. I don't think that's a terrible comp, actually. Yeah.
So yeah, those are my points. And again, I probably, if this was next year or if he had had a taste of double A, I probably would have put him at 16, 17, 18. But the reason he just barely got cut for Puck was because of the proximity.
Yeah, I mean, Keller also has really good strikeout numbers too. And I don't want to just, you know, look at a stat page and say that, but his offerings do you know, indicate that he could continue to have pretty substantial strikeout numbers as he grows throughout the minor league. So I think Keller is certainly somebody that his stock is rising and is somebody that you want to buy in fantasy for sure. All right, so where are we at? Number 14 now?
Yep.
Who we have at number 14?
Jose De Leon.
I have De Leon at 11, but I have Fulmer at 14.
Carson Fulmer?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. And I have De Leon at 14 as well. So let's talk about Jose De Leon. I assume since he's a Rays guy, I can talk about him.
Go ahead, man.
I'll say this about De Leon. I've not been the high guy on him ever. And it's not because I don't think that he can be a quality major leaguer. I don't believe in the secondary offerings quite yet. And he got, you know, I mean, I don't take a lot from spring, but just watching him in spring, I thought he was a little more athletic. You know, it looks like he's kind of packed on a few pounds since, you know, last season even with the Dodgers. So, you know, not that that's something that I'm worried about long term, but he's got a solid fastball. The Rays are going to work with him on fastball command. His changeup is fine. But really, like, when it comes down to his breaking pitch, he's not that great there. And I just think that this is just going to be a guy that is probably a mid-tier fantasy starter moving forward. He does have a safe floor, and I think that the Rays are going to do really good things with him in terms of mechanically and his pitch mix and, you know, being able to pitch higher in the zone, because I think that is a problem for him, being able to consistently pitch high in the zone. The Rays like to teach that to their young starters. So I think that De Leon is kind of being overbought this year in redraft leagues because people think that he's going to be up faster than he actually is. And I think in long-term dynasty, people are probably assuming he's going to be a number two starter for them. And I just think that he's more of a number four, number five long-term, which is why I have him at number 14 on this list. Really safe floor. I think that he's going to be a major leaguer, which is obviously currency. But I just think the upside isn't that of a guy that's going to be a top-tier fantasy starter. Matt, you can go
ahead. A lot of what you said, man, I think a lot of people are down on him because he was traded for Logan Forsythe, and Logan Forsythe is actually a pretty good player.
Yeah, I don't think that should be a reason you should be down on him at all.
No, but I think that is out there, kind of. Another reason why I am down on him is all the injuries the Dodgers had last year, and they still didn't go to De Leon. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, maybe they never really liked him from the start because they were anxious to trade him this year. But De Leon led all AAA starters in K percentage minus walk percentage, which is a really good predictor for major league success. And while he doesn't have elite velocity, he does sit in the low 90s with a little bit of deception and movement, and the changeup is a plus pitch. Lacks consistent curveball, but it does show flashes at times. He's gonna struggle with home runs because, as I mentioned earlier, with the lack of fastball. And I think that problem is going to get magnified. Leaving the NL West and going to the American League East is probably the worst thing for him. But all three of his pitches do play up because the command is elite. It was a hell of a late-round find for the Dodgers to get De Leon, and then they turned him obviously in to fill a big need for them. De Leon was drafted in the 24th round by them. Jarrell Cotton was in the 20th round. So they do pretty well getting those right-handed pitchers in the late rounds. But I think moving to Tampa is going to be bad for his long-term development only because of the division he's in now. So
yeah, I don't think the development will be a bad thing for him. I just think that the division is kind of a hard sell.
Development, right, wrong term. Development will be fine because the Rays are good at that. But yes, the division is a bad fit, I'll say.
Yeah, but I do think that the strikeout-to-walk ratio will continue to be fine once he gets to the major leagues. I do think the home runs will be a problem. He had a problem with home runs in his short stint in the majors last year. But, you know, how about you, Andy? What are your thoughts on De Leon? You have him a little bit higher than us. I'm assuming it's because of his proximity. But are you a little bit higher in terms of his long-term upside, or do you think that he's just a really safe floor?
Well, so I actually like him more on the Rays system. I don't like him pitching at the AL East, but that's because I don't like anybody pitching in the AL East. I think the Rays system is a lot better bringing up pitchers than the Dodgers system is. And sort of re the Forsythe trade, if you look at the Dodgers pitching, I mean, they didn't need De Leon. They had six decent starters. So although I think his ceiling has definitely come down a lot, and that's part of the reason why he isn't in the top 10 for me, you can probably get him at a decent price this year. Because he had that bad year, B, he had that bad trade, or quote-unquote bad trade. So people are probably discounting him. I don't think he's going to be sort of what we were thinking he was going to be last year. You know, he was put in the same conversation as Berrios last year for me. But I do think you can get him at a discount, but just don't expect, you know, full return on price.
Yeah, I agree. Let's move on to number 13. I already mentioned I had Mitch Keller. How about you, Andy? Who do you have there?
I have Fulmer at 13.
Do we want to touch on Fulmer? What about you, Matt? Where do you have Fulmer ranked?
I do not have Fulmer ranked, but we could talk about him. He's on his list, so.
Yeah, let's talk about Fulmer for a minute.
Is this going to be my Colin Moran?
No, absolutely.
No.
Not nearly as bad. Defend your pick though, Andy.
Well, so again, he's sort of the safe, you know, gonna have major league at bats this year. There's a lot to like. There's a lot to like with him. Plus fastball, very good. Plus curveball, but that's where the story ends. Therefore, I do think he'll make it. I do think he will pitch this year, but when he struggles starting, they're probably going to move him to the bullpen. But the fastball is real. The fastball is real. The command is not real. It's a question mark. That's why I think he will pitch this year. He'll start a couple games. If he does poorly, he'll get moved to the bullpen, and he'll do well there too.
I don't have him ranked or as an honorable mention, but I do. I mean, I always will have an affinity for Carson Fulmer. I've seen him a ton. He played for Vanderbilt. I watched a ton of their games. He's kind of got a Tim Lincecum-esque wind up. It's really wacky, and he's shorter, so it causes a lot of deception. But you kind of hit the nail on the head there, Andy. His command is something that's, you know, something to be desired for sure. I will say this though, I've watched him a good amount this spring, and at least in the outing or two that I've seen him, he's looked to have settled down a bit. Now, I'm not saying that that's, you know, going to be something that just that he's turned the corner and all of a sudden he's going to start, you know, reaching his full potential, but I do like that the White Sox have kind of worked with him in the offseason, and he's seemed to have kind of retained some of that information and been able to adjust a bit to what he is expected to do in the major league. So I think at the very least he's a bullpen arm, and I think he'll be a quality bullpen arm at that, because he does have a legit curve. I mean, his curve is nasty, and his fastball is solid as well. I mean, it's up there in the 95-plus range at times. Definitely fits a nice reliever, you know, type profile. But I do think that there still is a chance for him to be a starter. So the fact that I don't have him as a honorable mention on here doesn't necessarily mean that I think that he's completely out in terms of his possibility to be a fantasy asset. I actually think that he's worth speculating on, just because the strikeout numbers are certainly legit. His arsenal is that of a guy that can be quality in terms of fantasy production. But I do think that he has a long way ahead before we can feel comfortable with him, you know, being able to command his pitches and being able to start in the major leagues. I mean, it's kind of the same argument as Newcomb, except for Newcomb has just posted better numbers in the minor leagues, you know, to this point. So what about you, Matt? What's your kind of current thoughts on somebody like Carson Fulmer?
Well, I had Fulmer ranked number 8, actually. Oh, never mind. That's just the White Sox list. Sorry.
Oh, wow. No, don't be a dick about it.
I'm just messing with you. The White Sox system is good.
Have they made a few moves, or probably stayed pretty stagnant on the minor league.
Rumor has it they've made a trade or two. Yes.
Yeah, I think they just got Elduque Hernandez again.
Yeah, that's it.
that's a name.
But you know, my love for Vanderbilt is strong. Not as strong as you, Mike, but it's up there. So Fulmer instantly had my attention,
coming out of college.
Oh yeah. But I actually think Fulmer is the biggest loser of the Chris Sale, Adam Eaton trades. Because I think he went from the top arm in the White Sox system to now he's behind, for me, in my opinion anyways, he's behind Giolito, Lopez, Kopech, and now even Alec Hansen. So I kind of, it might push him to the bullpen, essentially, because assuming everyone stays healthy, this trade itself is the reason that actually he might push him to the bullpen full time, despite the delivery, which I think he's better suited for the bullpen anyways. And the stuff should really tick up in short stints. We saw flashes with the White Sox this year out of the bullpen where he did look really good, but he also didn't know where it was going. 7 walks in 11 innings. Yes, sound the small sample size alarms for that, but I think that's worth keeping track of. I do hope they leave him as a starter this year in AAA, kind of see what happens. Maybe, you know, working with new pitchers, getting new philosophies could change something. I'm not betting on it, but I do think even if he does move to the pen with the way the game is shifting, multi-inning relievers might be a thing, and he could have that, which should produce value because he will strike guys out no matter what role. So,
all righty, so let's go to number 12. I had Cotton there. How about you, Matt?
Reynaldo. I have Brett Honeywell at 13, so yes.
Okay, and what about you, Andy?
I had Fulmer at 13, and then Matt and I both had Lopez at 12.
Okay, so I want to save Honeywell for the top 10. I'm assuming you have him in your top 10, Andy?
Yep.
Okay, we'll talk about him next week. And number 11, who do you guys have?
Robert Gesellman. I'm sure I'm the high guy there.
You are not. How about you, Matt, Andy?
Yeah, you are definitely not the high guy. I have De Leon, and we already touched on him, so we can move on.
We will talk about Gesellman next week, since we are obviously higher than you are.
Perfect.
And since we're going pretty long here, let's give one honorable mention a piece that is not repeated, and we'll just kind of give our takes on them. So, Andy, give us one honorable mention of yours that you really like.
Oh, man, I'm struggling between saying Alex Reyes or Appel, but I'm going to say Appel. And Reyes is there for obvious reasons, but Appel is – I'm gonna submit Appel as an honorable mention because injuries have plagued what is sure to be or what was sure to be a really, really good arm. I don't like his move to Philadelphia. I don't like everything they've done to him down there. I don't like how appendicitis seemed to have screwed everything up for him. But his fastball's there, his slider is there, his changeup is there. He is exciting. He's an exciting pitcher. I went to school in Philadelphia, and I went to a ton of games in Lehigh Valley. And it was I would always try to either schedule my games around either him or going to see J.P. Crawford because I love these guys so much. But he doesn't crack the top 10 because all of that sexiness is gone due to injuries.
I mean, what I love about you, Andy, is that no matter what, you always just surprise. And even though Mark Appel is probably, like, people are probably laughing, like, what the hell is this guy thinking? I love that you just come out and give the guys that you want to put there. So,
well, I mean, I didn't rank him. He's not ranked, and for good reason.
But the fact that he's an honorable mention, you know, yeah. I think is a kind of a little vote of confidence that a lot of people probably wouldn't want to put on Appel. And I appreciate you doing that. Just same with the Colin Moran, you know, I mean.
I appreciate you too, Mike Warner. I appreciate you too.
I love that you give a little added like nugget to the show that, you know, you're unpredictable is what it is. That's the
well,
best.
I mean, this podcast 2 years ago, I bet it was all over Appel.
Are there any other 2013 first round draft picks that you like a lot? Because I mean, Appel and Moran were in the same draft, so I thought that was interesting.
Back coming in hot once again.
Yeah.
No, it's all good, man.
Matt secretly hates you, Andy. That's what it is.
No. He's
got a notebook with my name and a bunch of X's all over it.
Does like
he's gonna step up to a voodoo doll soon?
I was gonna say, making it right now. But I watched a little bit of Appel pitch in spring training, man, and that body is shit.
Yeah,
he's like pear shaped, and that's not good.
You're pear shaped. Who's your offense?
But I'm not a pitching prospect, so I can be pear shaped.
Give us one honorable mention, Matt.
Sandy Alcantara.
I knew it was gonna be him.
Why wouldn't it be? You only let me pick one, so I'm going with Sandy. Hit 102 extended spring training outing 2 years ago. Stuff is ridiculous. 103 hits allowed, 153 strikeouts, and 123 innings. Big fastball, obviously. Big curveball. Needs to tighten up the command, but all 21-year-olds do. He also needs to repeat his delivery more consistently, but again, that kind of comes with that. High 90s fastball with movement. The curve is above average. Changeup probably an average pitch at best. Good organization for developing an arm. I think they've done pretty well in the past with that. Sandy Alcantara, this is your last time to buy him as well. So get on that now.
For listeners that might not know, what organization is that?
The Cardinals.
Oh, the Cardinals. Oh, okay. I could dish you right back out there.
I agree.
I'm all for it, man.
I just want to let you guys and the listeners know that if the recording falls out and just stops at any point, it's because there's like a tsunami coming through here in Nashville. So be prepared. Be very prepared. That's kind of why I'm trying to wrap this up here. But
R.I.P. Mike Warner.
Yeah, R.I.P. very soon. the guy that I want to talk about is, and I'm going to butcher the hell out of his name, but Thomas Zapucki, if that's even close.
Got it.
And he's going to be an honorable mention, but I really wanted to put him in the top 20. I really did. But he's a little bit too far away. But what I love about him is that, I mean, he's still insanely raw, insanely young. But in 2015, he was sitting in about the 90-mile-an-hour range. And now he's sitting 97 in 2016. Absolutely filthy numbers. The curveball is legit. It's a 12-6 offering. He just spins that thing off. It's a really power pitch for him. And, you know, obviously he needs to kind of come to grips with a third pitch, more than likely a changeup that's kind of below average right now. But last year, the numbers were absolutely legit. The Mets have obviously shown that they can. There's some thunder in the background. It's gonna happen soon, boys. It's going to happen soon. Yeah. Anyways, he's obviously shown that, or the Mets have shown that they can build some of their young starters. Some of them haven't worked out, but some others do. I think that Zapucki can be one of those guys that really does work out. He's another one of those arms that I don't think a lot of people were on quite yet. But if he continues this trajectory and this path, we could see a guy that really, you know, turns into a high octane fantasy arm. Probably won't see him for a while. Again, you know, it's probably more of a 2019, 2020 ETA. But I think that he's showing a lot of really good things at a very young age. And, you know, hopefully he gets a nice little innings bump this year and we're able to kind of see all that he can do.
So Bucky ranked number 82 on my list, and I love him. Destroyed low A, 1.38 ERA, over 15 Ks per nine, 15.15. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Mid 90s, like you said, from the left side, touches 97 plus slider, changeup coming around. Obviously, a little bit of concerns with the the delivery because it is kind of goofy. So people kind of think reliever. He's got body parts flying all over the place. And a little back injury in his past that cost him some time. And the proximity goes against him. But he's a guy that's going to make a big jump, and I feel like we said this a lot, but he's another guy to watch for next year. I like this call, Mike. I like Sapucki a lot.
So yeah, do I.
I like him too. I have him. If these numbers are correct, I think I have him at almost 50 innings with 2 home runs given up. So that's a decent thing. But 20 years old, I'd like to see more time out of him. But I really do like him too.
Hopefully, I can live another 20 years after the storm because it is really rattling back here. I don't know if you guys can hear it, but it's like
I heard the thunder. That was pretty sweet.
Send flowers to @ Mike Warner FWFB.
Absolutely.
Virtual flowers there.
Yeah, digital, or you can send edible arrangements to my house. I will give. I'll just post my address on Twitter as well, just as like the pinned tweet. Just throw my address.
Always
on
a
there.
Great idea.
Yeah, I'll throw my phone number, social security number, all that stuff. Anyways, let's wrap this up before my all my house appliances just go to shit. Andy, where can everybody follow you on Twitter? What are you up to nowadays? How much are you benching?
How much am I benching? I can't even pick up a bench. You can follow me on Twitter at @AAndersonFWFB. Please ask me questions. Like I said, I have so much time throughout the day, and all of it should be concentrated on helping you do better than me in fantasy baseball. Super excited about the next podcast we've got coming up. We've got our next top 10 and then outfielders after that, which is going to be great. And I'm looking forward to drafting. I'm getting antsy. My drafts are coming up. I have Mookie Betts, Alex Bregman, and Carlos Correa in one AL-only league, and I'm really excited about those three.
Well, that sounds pretty nasty.
Yeah, it is very nasty.
How about you, Matt? What nasty things are you up to nowadays?
Nothing, man. Matt Thompson, or MD Tomp FWFB is the Twitter handle. Excited to do these podcasts. Check us out on the Monday show, which kind of goes along with our theme. We're doing starting pitcher, obviously finishing up that next week. Then we jump to the outfield, like Mr. Andy already mentioned. Hopefully Mike Warner doesn't die in the Stormageddon down there in Nashville, because we need him for our podcast only. other than that, yeah, thanks for listening.
Some added sound effects in the background. It's kind of it kind of brings the mood, you know, brings the mood down a little bit, and you know. Yeah. But
FWFB After Dark.
There you go.
With Mike, Matt, and Andy supplying all of your fantasy needs.
Mike Warner. Mike the Lance Warner.
Anyways, before I die, at Mike Warner FWFB on Twitter. Again, please rate and review the show. I might not see the reviews, but I would really appreciate if you left one. And again, we do this absolutely free. Really helps us out. Please follow these guys on Twitter. Ask us any questions. We will be happy to answer any questions on air if you would like. If not, then we can always answer them privately as well. But yes, check us out on Twitter. Check out the Monday show. Check out every day we have a brand new podcast coming out. Justin is out this week, so we will be kind of having different, probably a couple shows out this week, but we will, you know, turn full back or go back to full, you know, podcast schedule starting next week when he returns. We're going to go through the rest of our pitchers list next week. I wanted to leave some guys out so that we could really kind of dig in a little bit deeper. So it'll probably be a little bit longer episode so that we can, you know, really dive into the top 10 and a few of the other guys. Definitely make sure you tune in next week. And yeah, I think that wraps us up. For Matt, Andy, and myself, thank you for listening and good luck in your drafts.
Get to the basement, Warner.
Oh, I'm going.
Higher ground. No, high ground.